to the O Woman podcast, where we discuss oh so many things about women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries. And we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Welcome to the show today. Thanks for listening. This is episode 47 of the O Woman podcast. We're continuing the topics, the discussion on a little bit biological, science-y stuff, just about our bodies, because how many of us really know all there is to know about the interesting, cool facts about the way our sexual organs and our female bodies work? I think it's a really cool thing, and I really wanted to talk about it. This episode kind of continues a mini book review, chapter by chapter, that I'm doing on the book Woman and Intimate Geography by the author Natalie Anger. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. She usually writes on science-related topics. But she's a fantastic, clever, hilarious author. And so a lot of the information in this episode comes from her book. But it's all science-based, so you could find this anywhere. You could look it up online and learn about it. Some of the stuff is her theories, which is so fun to read. I love reading about women theorizing about their bodies, especially when they're clever, interesting, relatable ideas. So today we're talking about your woman's body, the fantastic clitoris. Most of us know what the clitoris is and what it does. And those of you that don't should probably go for an exploration down there and check it out. I've said before that the clitoris is not my sexual part that I am most sexualized over, like personally. I know that it comes into play with my orgasms, definitely, but I feel more sensual with internal stimulation, and then with general kind of vulval movement, and not so much like a clitoral thing. But that's the case with some women, so it just depends. The thing here, the lesson here, is do what your body likes, and then there you go. That's the way it goes. Doesn't matter what's working to what percentage and to what degree, but it's best to know all the information about the way the body works so that you can really think about leaning into it this way or leaning into it that way and thinking of what's the best for you sexually. So we're talking about the clitoris today. Very exciting. A lot of the theory behind the clitoris, mostly these theories were created by men in the past, some of the first philosophers and scientists, was that it was the counterpart to the penis. And some of the reasons for thinking that is that it grows from the same area as does the penis when the infant is, or the fetus is growing. It grows from a genital ridge area, kind of a androgynous genital ridge area, and then it, you know, either turns into a penis or a clitoris. But the difference here is there's no, that we know of, practical use for the clitoris. There's a practical use for the penis. You must use it. It usually must be hard in order to impregnate someone or to have sex, which that's the point of sex. Well, originally. And penises also pee, you know. So you got two reasons there. But the clitoris does none of those things. It doesn't let out pee. And it doesn't help with the impregnation process, supposedly. So, is it really the counterpart to the penis? I don't know. Let's think about it a little bit more. Another difference is that the clitoris has about 8,000 nerve fibers. But the penis only has about 4,000. So, the clitoris has twice as many nerves in it as does the penis. And it's generally such a smaller thing than someone's penis. Now, these nerve fibers are more concentrated in this area of the body than they are in any other area of our body as a woman. There's more nerve fibers per square whatever than in any other part of our body. And that is interesting. So what is the point of that? Very likely the point is orgasms. I mean, come on. But who knows, really? So you're thinking about the size of a clitoris. The average in this, so this is an average because I think it's interesting. Clitorises can come in so many different shapes and sizes. Well, not so many different shapes, but so many different sizes, just like vulva. Not quite as variable, I don't believe, but I have a smaller clitoris. I've always known this. And that's one reason why I think it's just less of a thing for me. But, the average infant's clitoris, and they did this because they measured when kids were born. I think they were trying to, you know, see what the average should be to base it on, you know, figuring out if certain infants were intersex or not, you know, with organs that looked kind of ambiguous, like, which one is it? I don't know. Is it a male or a female? So the average infant clitoris is about 4 to 5 millimeters. That's like the length of a pencil eraser. That's not that long, but it grows, of course, as you grow. The average adult's, the length of an adult's clitoris is about 16 millimeters, which is like the length of a dime. But now keep in mind that some of our clitoris, it's not like sticking out completely like a wiener. It's embedded in a lot of the folds of our skin, and there's a clitoral hood and things like that. So it's really hard to actually measure a clitoris. And I challenge you to do so just because that sounds like a fun opportunity to learn more about your body. Now, here's another really cool thing about the clitoris. Unlike the vulva, and those kind of sensitive areas around there, the clitoris is not sensitive to estrogen. You know, like I was saying in a previous episode, that the vulva swells and gets bigger when you go through puberty, and it kind of recedes back and becomes more streamlined shape in that area when you go through menopause, because you have less estrogen in your body at that point. But the clitoris doesn't do that. So after menopause, it ain't going away. So that erogenous zone of your body is going to be there. It's never leaving you behind, which is really a cool thing. Now, pregnancy might make it change shape, get a little bit bigger, and it also might make it stay bigger, just because pregnancy does really interesting things to your body. One of my friends, her hair is definitely permanently redder than it was. And it's just different things. I think it's really neat how bodies change because of pregnancy. You're changed eternally when you have a child. And that's why I think you should be given the choice to have a child or not. So anyway, that's a side tangent. But now, another thing about the clitoris is, if you think about it, women have the ability to have multiple orgasms, you know, like in a row, like bam, bam, bam. Men can have multiple orgasms, but it's kind of like multiple orgasms in a day, not like in a row. They got to like have an orgasm, take a break, breathe, get worked back up. You know, it could be like a 30-minute affair. Or if you have a more spry character in your life, it could be a 5 or 10-minute affair. Whatever, but there's still a turnaround time. And there isn't this with clitorises. One of the theories about why multiple orgasms are so achievable for women but not for men is because the clitoris doesn't have a venous plexus, which is, it's some veins that are in the penis that are designed to take the blood away from the penis, you know, just naturally there, so that the blood flows through it normally in real life. You're just peeing, you're hanging out, whatever. And those venous plexus remove the blood supply and normally. But when a guy gets turned on, the venous plexus gets clamped off because of the muscles. The penis muscles kind of clamp it off, so the blood can't leave, so there is your boner. But women don't have that same thing. The clit engorges in a similar way, as does a man's penis, but it is more fluid with its ability to engorge and relax. So you're kind of, you know, you're riding the bumpy seas of orgasm. You can kind of go up and down at will, as opposed to men are kind of like a tidal wave, and then they have to, you know, get back in the boat and go swimming out there for another tidal wave. So it's really an interesting thing. So beyond all this, Natalie Andrew, the author of the book, talks about three of like the kind of the big ideas about what the heck the clitoris is in the first place. Like, why is it even around? One of the thoughts is that it's the vestigial penis. One of the thoughts is that it's the vestigial clitoris, that it just is the clitoris. It was always supposed to be there. But one of the major theories is that clitoris is an adaptation, which I think is a really interesting theory, such that it exists to give pleasure so that it makes us want penetration, which makes sense because if you're thinking about it, that would be a potential pregnancy scenario. So it is an adaptation that makes us actually want to have intercourse, since less women have orgasms through intercourse than they do through more clitoral-focused kind of stimulation. But then, based on this theory, the author's wondering, like, okay, so why is it such a fickle thing? Like, the clitoris is so fickle. Like, you know, sometimes it doesn't work for you, and you're like, what the heck? It's not like usually the way men are. They're like, okay, I'm turned on, and if we do a couple things, off I go. Women, it's a lot more of a fickle body part. And so why is that the case, then, if it's specifically an adaptation for giving pleasure? And something that she says in her book, she says, the clitoris is designed to encourage its bearer to take control of her sexuality. I don't know if that's the reason it's designed, but I love that. Because What more do I really talk about on the O Woman podcast besides taking control of your sexuality? To me, that's sexy in itself. That makes me more turned on than anything, is I'm in control of my sexuality. Not necessarily in control of every sexual situation, but I'm in control of my sexuality. I feel comfortable saying this and wanting this and doing this. So I love how she says that it's designed to encourage its bearer, usually a woman, to take control of her sexuality. So in order to understand the fickleness of it, you have to get used to it. You have to try it out on your own. You have to know what it likes. You have to demand that from your partner. And that you have to take charge. And I want to read a part from Natalie Andrews' book that's in the chapter about the clitoris that I think is so cleverly written and so interesting, related to this exact thing. So she says, in my view, all the intricacies we've been mulling, the apparent fickleness and mullishness of the clitoris, its asynchronicity with male responsiveness, and the variability of its performance from one woman to the next, can be explained by making a simple assumption that the clitoris is designed to encourage its bearer to take control of her sexuality. Yes, this idea sounds like a rank political tract, and body tissue has no party affiliation. But it can vote with its behavior, working best when you treat it right, faltering when it's abused or misunderstood. In truth, the clitoris operates at peak performance when a woman feels a thunder with life and strength, when she is bellowing on top, figuratively if not literally. The clitoris hates being scared or bullied. Some women who've been raped report that their vaginas become lubricated even as they feared for their lives. And a good thing, too, for the lubrication prevented them from being ripped apart. But women almost never have orgasms during a rape, male fantasies notwithstanding. The clitoris will not be hurried or pushed. A woman who worries that she is taking too long for her partner will take that much longer. A woman who stops watching the pot sends a message to the clitoris, I'm here, and within moments, the pot boils over. The clitoris loves power, and it strives to reinforce the sensation of playing commando. Sex researchers have found that women who are easily and multiply orgasmic have one trait in common. They take responsibility for their pleasure. They don't depend on the skillfulness or mind-reading abilities of their lovers to get what they want. They know which positions and angles work best for them, and they negotiate said postures verbally or kinesthetically. Moreover, the positions that offer many women the greatest satisfaction are those that give them some control over the sexual choreography. On top, for example, or side by side. A movie that shows a woman reaching frenzied crescendo while being hoisted up and slammed against a wall in classic Last Tango in Paris fashion is not a movie directed by a woman. Yes, yes, I love that part. It's so fantastic. It not only does it explain in really fantastic, great detail about how the clitoris works and how, like, highly emotional it is, how fickle, you know, which to me isn't bad. It's a highly emotional fickleness in a good way. It is. But it also talks exactly, you know, in more detail what I was saying earlier, is that you have to be in control. You have to be a conqueror and a champion. You have to go in there and try it out for yourself. You have to figure out what your body needs and not expect someone else to figure it out. And that is the biggest key to a sexually satisfying life and having orgasms. Now, it doesn't mean that you abandon your partner, you know, whatever, but it does mean that you spend a lot of time alone figuring stuff out, because then you can bring to the table all of this self-awareness to your partner, which is ultimately should be a hot turn on for him or her. And if it isn't, then they're ridiculous, because as if they know all the answers, come on. I mean, it's your body. You have to know. You're the expert. You share the expertise with others, and they perfect it in ways that you maybe couldn't have guessed. But you at least lay all the foundation and the groundwork for the sexual experience that is to come. One thing that the author says that I think is super hilarious in talking about understanding your body and trying yourself out kind of thing, is that she says, all the women in my immediate family learned how to climax by smoking grass. Which I think is so funny. And I think the reason for that is because there's a sense of not being in your own head all the time and thinking too hard about it. You would be out of it, you know, kind of like wine. But the thing about wine is, you know, or beer, is that it also depresses your whole system. It takes everything down a notch. So sensation might be stronger, but actual, like, physical translation of a sensation doesn't really work. It literally retards the system. Like, that's what it does. That's what it does. So if only that would work, but I think it's so funny that she talks about, how everyone in her family learned how to climax smoking weed, because I have some friends that did too, or that at least got further down that pattern of just leaving their head, leaving their logic, leaving their worries and their fears and their confusion, and just going with the flow, which is literally what you have to do. So I wanted to mention that just because I found it very funny. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about today is, if, you know, clitorises are so central to women's orgasms, which we know they are in many cases, it's interesting to think about women who have had some issues in that area. So a clitoridectomy means someone's clitoris was chopped off. I mean, it's very stressful, horrifying stuff. Now, I know you're imagining that this, oh, that's female genital mutilation or female circumcision. That happens in Africa. That happens in Asia. It also happens in the U.S. And it doesn't happen in the U.S. just because of, like, our idea of, oh, well, that ethnic belief, that cultural idea. Okay, that happens in other places. But it also happens for purely aesthetic reasons in the U.S. with girls that are born with clitorises that people think are too big, which is utterly ridiculous. If it's too big, like, it wouldn't be there. There is no such thing as something that's too big. Like, she was born that way for a reason. And if it makes someone feel uncomfortable, oh, does it look like a penis? Who knows? Let her grow up and decide on her own. If she thinks it looks like a penis, chances are she's going to get used to it and not care, and whatever partner she picks is going to be fine with it. But you chop off her clitoris, or even you shorten it to make it shorter, which is a thing, not as common anymore, but it still happens after a baby's born or later on in time. They'll talk about it and they'll say, oh, this seems wrong. It's just considered sort of an aesthetic surgery, not even anything worth mentioning. But that counts. And that takes away so many nerve endings, as we talked about, that are in the clitoris, and so much sexual identity that you can feel that is stolen from you. And I can't speak from fully knowing, because that has not happened to me. That I know of. I'm sure it hasn't. I'll have to ask my mother, but she would not have done that. But it takes away so much from you. And like I said, I don't know from my perspective, but I've read personal accounts of women who have experienced extreme female genital mutilation, or women in the U.S. that you wouldn't think it would happen to them. Some, you know, middle class, whatever family, had their baby in the hospital, average old person. Still, it happens. It is allowed to happen still. And it's becoming less popular, and it's so not okay. But just being aware that that's a thing, and how much that robs someone of their sexuality, considering what a sexual organ it really is. But when you think about that, it requires you to think about how some of these women, even some women that have had almost complete, very scarring, very upsetting genital mutilation, can still have orgasms. So what's that about? How does that happen? In Andrew's book, in her chapter, she focuses on two different women, both of which had their clitorises cut off when they were babies, because they looked too big. One of them has orgasms, the other one doesn't. It's hard to say how much of that kind of thing is going to be from an emotional place, and how much of that is going to be from just different erogenous zones in the body still being very active. For myself, for example, if I didn't have a clitoris on the external sort that we're talking about, I don't think it would be quite as big of a deal as if some of my friends didn't, because that's where they get all their pleasure. I do not. I know that I have areas in other parts of my body, inside of me and stuff, that would allow me to have orgasms, or I'm pretty sure that that's the case. I'm so glad I never have to test that out, because it's not fair. You can't take that from someone. That's not fair. But it's just interesting to see how there's such variation in women's pleasure and in different body parts. So why would you go ignoring any part or chopping off any part? Utterly ridiculous. You should test them all out, see what they're like, and go with that. It's all about understanding what your body likes and understanding what your body does. Because it's such a fantastic place to be, your body. You should learn about it. That's the end of the show for today. Thank you so much for listening to the O Woman Podcast. As always, I love talking with you guys. Remember to subscribe on iTunes. Check us out on Facebook, O Woman Podcast. Check out the website, owomanpodcast.com. And I will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. I love you guys. Bye.